The People of the Abyss by Jack London. Introduction. The chief priests and rulers cry, O Lord and Master, not ours the guilt. We build but as our fathers built. Behold thine images, how they stand, sovereign and sole through all our land. Our task is hard, with sword and flame to hold thine earth forever the same, and with sharp crooks of steel to keep still as thou leftest them thy sheep. Then Christ sought out an artisan, a low-browed, stunted, haggard man, and a motherless girl, whose fingers thin crushed from her faintly want and sin. These set he in the midst of them, and as they drew back their garment hem, for fear of defilement, Lo, here, said he, the images ye have made of me. James Russell Lowell. Preface. The experiences related in this volume fell to me in the summer of 1902. I went down into the underworld of London with an attitude of mind which I may best liken to that of the explorer. I was open to be convinced by the evidence of my eyes rather than by the teachings of those who had not seen, or by the words of those who had seen and gone before. Further, I took with me certain simple criteria with which to measure the life of the underworld. That which made for more life, for physical and spiritual health, was good. That which was made for less life, which hurt and dwarfed and distorted life, was bad. It will be readily apparent to the reader that I saw much that was bad. Yet it must not be forgotten that the time of which I write was considered good times in England. The starvation and lack of shelter I encountered constituted a chronic condition of misery which is never wiped out even in the periods of greatest prosperity. Following the summer in question came a hard winter. Great numbers of the unemployed formed into processions, as many as a dozen at a time, and daily marched through the streets of London, crying for bread. Mr. Justin McCarthy, writing in the month of January 1903 to the New York Independent, briefly epitomizes the situation as follows. The workhouses have no space left in which to pack the starving crowds who are craving every day and night at their doors for food and shelter. All the charitable institutions have exhausted their means in trying to raise supplies of food for the famishing residents of the garrets and cellars of London lanes and alleys. The quarters of the Salvation Army in various parts of London are nightly besieged by hosts of the unemployed and the hungry, for whom neither shelter nor the means of sustenance can be provided. It has been urged that the criticism I have passed on things as they are in England is too pessimistic. I must say in extenuation that of optimists I am the most optimistic, but I measure manhood less by political aggregations than by individuals. Society grows, while political machines rack to pieces and become scrap. For the English, so far as manhood and womanhood and health and happiness go, I see a broad and smiling future, but for a great deal of the political machinery, which at present mismanages for them, I see nothing else than the scrap heap. Jack London, Piedmont, California. Chapter 1. The Descent.
But you can't do it, you know, friends said, to whom I applied for assistance in the matter of sinking myself down into the east end of London. You had better see the police for a guide, they added on second thought, painfully endeavouring to adjust themselves to the psychological processes of a madman who had come to them with better credentials than brains.
But I don't want to see the police, I protested. What I wish to do is to go down into the East End and see things for myself. I wish to know how those people are living there, and why they are living there, and what they are living for. In short, I am going to live there myself.
You don't want to live down there, everybody said, with disapprobation writ large upon their faces. Why, it is said there are places where a man's life isn't worth tuppence.
The very places I wish to see, I broke in.
But you can't, you know, was the unfailing rejoinder.
Which is not what I came to see you about, I answered brusquely, somewhat nettled by their incomprehension,